We begin the hour like we do every Tuesday by welcoming into the program our friend, writer Colin Fleming. Hello there, Colin.
Wear your helmets, bikers. Nobody needs their brains on the side of the road.
You know, I guess. I agree with you on that, and yet I grew up at a time when there were no helmets. We drove around like crazy boys and girls. And I believe the brain damage I suffered was mostly inconsequential.
You were a hardcore Huffy rebel.
I was. Because I was sharing the story with somebody the other day. I grew up at a time when Evel Knievel was quite popular, and we decided to replicate some of his adventures.
Oh, sure. Right. Yeah. Lots of skin knees and going over the handlebars. Off many an Evel Knievel F jump. Yeah, I remember that.
Oh, that was a bad, bad idea. And yet, you know, I'm still standing after all this time, so who knows?
But man to take down.
Let younger generations learn from my mistakes here. But we're not talking bicycles today. We want to talk about my favorite beverage, coffee.
Yes, your favorite beverage, which you told me you like to prepare with some sugar, but you don't do that conversion therapy that some people do where they get their coffee and they order and they say, give me 5 Splendas. And then they put in all these other things, right? And they turn it into something that's post-coffee. But I personally guess I should feel bad about this, but I don't really. I judge people by if they drink coffee and how they drink coffee. It's one of my standard judgments along whether if you like the ocean, how you feel about Christmas, and if you're into hockey. If you go 4 for 4, chances are you're one of the better people. You have more morals and everything. 3 for 4, you can still be pretty solid. If we really dip down below, like, the 500 mark, then it's not going to be so great for us, probably.
So do I score about a 3.5 then, because I do put a little cream and sugar in?
I'm worried that I'm overrating your fondness for the sea, that I'm simply going by the fact that you live in Maine. So I was thinking about this today, and because I normally have this conversation with myself. I said, does Kimball deserve a demerit there? It's like, no, we'll give him the good faith on that one. And you're into hockey, so hockey people are just grounded. If you notice, too, when you see players coming into the game, that like pregame Bruins feed on Nesson, they all have the Starbucks coffee. It's like such a healthy beverage that now you drink it before you play this ridiculously arduous, grueling sport. But, yeah, I think coffee is something beyond a beverage that you imbibe that can play a different factor in different times of your life. I know now that I've given up alcohol. Coffee is really the only interesting thing I drink. And so it's a little something also to look forward to while my life is rubbish, and I use it as a certain kind of motivational tool, almost. I'll have coffee when I, like today I wrote 3,500 words, and quickly, like in an hour and a half, and I'll have the coffee on the desk, and I will not allow myself, in my draconian Puritan way, to take a sip until I've earned some of that bad boy. So I'm like halfway down the page, and I know what the next page is going to be, and it's like, all right, you can have a sip of this. And the thing about it, too, is this isn't like I'm Balzac and I'm getting out the proper beans that I just got at the store. This is coffee that often, quite literally, has existed outside of the refrigerator for 4 days. You just give it a little stir in case the stuff like starting to ferment on top. And then it's like, all right, you can tuck into this bad boy.
I'm glad you brought that up because we were going to talk about how long such coffee is good. Carrie, by the way, nodding in approval with you drinking the old coffee.
Yes, I drink coffee. I'll brew a pot of coffee, and if I don't finish it, I'll leave it there and just pour off another cup the next morning or even a couple of mornings later. That's not an issue, and people think that's odd, and it doesn't. Coffee is good still.
Yeah, it's not odd. It's defeatist. If you do not finish what you have. I feel like I've performed in a lackluster fashion if I have not completed the coffee, whether it's the pot or whether it's the venti from Dunkin' Donuts or from Starbucks. Now, we don't want to be responsible for people like poisoning themselves. So if you have milk in your coffee, don't leave that out for 4 days. And my mother's probably not pleased with any of these things I'm saying. But if it's black coffee, you are good for a solid 4 days. Maybe if you like live at the equator, you'd have more of a problem. But I've met people who are such gourmands that they don't even know that you can get a field of mold atop your coffee. So you want to avoid that. And the thing, too, about black coffee that's been out overnight and it's the next morning and you have a lot of stuff to do, there is like a double jolt. There's an extra tartness that comes from what I call the aging process. Like when you have a nice Lafroy whiskey and you want that to be 12 years old or whatever, this is the 3 to 4 day coffee version of that.
Yes, I could not agree with you more on that one. And yeah, the milk is not a problem for me because with very rare exceptions, I don't put anything in the coffee, no cream of any sort.
I use it as part of my workout routine, too, which we've discussed a few times in the show. So what I'll do is I'm in the north end of Boston, and I will run 3 miles. It's a mile and a half there and back to the Bunker Hill Monument. And then I go to this diner at the end of my street, and it's called Anthony's. I come in, and I'm just sweating and everything. He lets me cut the line. He sees me coming through the door, and he thinks, I have to get this guy out of here, lest he displace the rest of my clientele. So everybody thinks, like, oh, who is this impressive fellow? And I'm thinking, oh, my goodness, I am such a pauper. Life is so bad right now, but this is my one perk. Because I am so befouled in my Celtics sweatshirt, I get to cut this line. He gives me that coffee, and then I think, well, now we have, like, a little traveling companion. I walk back to Charlestown. I climbed the monument anywhere from 3 to 11 times, and then I walked back, walked 3 miles, ran 3 miles, done 5 climbs, and I've had like a good coffee to sort of motivate me through that really tedious experience. You do something all the time. It's tedious, and coffee is like a little sort of traveling companion with you, something when you walk like 20 miles like I do sometimes. It's just a perk to look forward to keep your ass in gear, and I find that when life is harder, so you happy people out there might not really have an affinity for coffee right now, but it's a little thing like that that can be sort of the only positive in your day. It's cold, you're wet, there's snow outside, life is not going as you wanted to at that moment, but you have hopes for the future. You get the warming, restorative beverage. And I also think, too, that's why it's factored so heavily in art, in literature, in music, jazz, blues. You see coffee coming up all of the time, whether it's with Balzac, Bach. You see it in film noir. You see it in Westerns. Think about when something bad happens to somebody in a Western. What do they always do for them? Well, they don't give them whiskey. You have some coffee. Like, you're traumatized. You went out into the street with the fastest gun in town, and, like, he shot you through the shoulder. And what does everybody say? Oh, get some bandages. Get him a cup of coffee, and you're good to go.
When I travel in the fall broadcasting college football for the University of Maine, our quest, the highlight of our trips quite often, you know, other than the football game, sometimes better than the games, is finding that perfect place on the road that has good, unpretentious, and yet fulfilling coffee.
I envy you, your coffee travelogue, which I've kept up with. And I'm limited basically to Dunkin' Donuts, which I still call that, Starbucks, in this diner. That's not really a diner at the end of the street. I just think of it as a diner because there is something wholesome about just flat-out milky diner coffee. I'll have diner coffee with milk, and you have that light brown. It's almost like a beige, like you're in kindergarten, and out comes the construction paper, and oh, we're going to get arty today. I can express myself. I feel like that's a very soothing feeling, and the diner coffee is that way, where Starbucks is more of a place I go where I do a lot of work in my head. I do a lot of reading. Their coffee is quite astringent. I'm always a Dunkin' Donuts person, first and foremost. And people like in publishing, they usually hate Dunkin' Donuts because they're talentless, pretentious fobs. And so they think that's something for the... They'll actually say things like, oh, that's for the people in the trades. It's just like galling. But I love Dunkin' Donuts. I always have. And I was aggrieved when they sliced the donuts part off of the name.
Right.
It bothered, like, for a long time, I thought it was Dunkin' Donuts, like D-U-N-C-A-N, like King Duncan from Shakespeare. And I thought, wow, that's so, like, arty. That's why I like this coffee so much. It's like this guy is out there. He's the king of the coffee and the donuts. Then I realized, like, wow, you're kind of like a functioning illiterate in some ways, that you look at this sign every day of your life and go into the store, and you've never been able to, like, sound it out properly. But I think when they dropped the donuts, that was because of the stigma with corpulence. didn't want to be on the side of, like, shaming people, but meanwhile come in and ram your gob full of everything that we have. And they said that it was like a clarity issue. People don't really eat donuts anymore, which is just flat out untrue. But Dunkin' is just a gerund with the G lopped off that references, like, dunking what? Like,
right.
Slam dunk contest? Like, Dominique?
Without the donuts, what are you dunking?
Yeah, like, what does that even mean? It's a complete non sequitur, like a reference to Kenny Sky Walker or something like that. It makes no sense. So it bothers me that they're, like, trying to hoodwink people. Now, to be fair to Dunkin' Donuts, short of, like, trafficking, like, in kids, I'm going to be going in as long as they're not doing something heinously illegal. They could change it to some, like, really awful name. But it's just, like, how do you pitch that at a meeting? Yeah, we'll just call it Dunkin'. No one will know what it means. Dunkin' what? Like, oh, it doesn't matter. As you please.
Now, you mentioned there's a time and a place for all of these various coffees, whether it's the Starbucks, the Dunkin' Donuts coffee, or the diner coffee, or even that which you have brewed at home. What's your determining factor in deciding which coffee experience you want to have at any given time?
Oh, that is one complex series of mental equations right there. Usually the diner will just be the workout thing. So four of the last 5 days, I've climbed the monument 3 times. And I never go over empty-handed. Another thing, too, is when I go to, like, the Brattle Theater, where I'm a member, and I'm sitting there watching some film from the 1930s, I can't just sit there without a coffee. Some people cannot sit there without the popcorn. And I find that wildly distracting, because your senses are heightened when you're in a group setting and you're there to take in a picture. And it's just like crunch, 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 crunch. Like, okay, do you need me to, like, slurp my ass off here for, like, competition? So I'll have the Dunkin' Donuts coffee then on my long walk, because when you're in Boston, as you assuredly know, you can't go, like, 2 blocks. there's a calming Dunkin'. Oh, behold, another Dunkin' oasis. So that. But when I'm at the desk and I'm doing the hard work of making art, that's when what I drink tends to be, like, the type of thing that, as I said before, my mother would just say, don't tell me about that. I don't know how you live the way you live right now, because I'm not there to muck about. I'm there to have that kind of, like, you think about, like, that Dylan song, One More Cup of Coffee, right? I don't think that guy in that song, before he goes to the valley below, is having, like, a nice frou-frou latte. He's powering through the black stuff from 3 nights ago, right? And it's like when Robert Johnson's hitching that Greyhound bus to ride. The last drink he has before he does that, it's not a nice steaming cappuccino. He's going hardcore. So I, like you, Mr. Kimball, I go hardcore in those moments.
Well, and I like that you use coffee as a reward when you're writing. Now, I'm not cranking out 3,500 words, but my Sunday ritual involves making a pot of coffee and then sitting down, and I will start with the first cup as I look out the window and organize my thoughts and plan for the day. And then I sit down to do some show prep for the week, to basically organize, figure out what guests are coming up, the big picture planning. But I don't let myself have that second cup until I've done a fair amount of planning. It's there. I can smell it. I know it's waiting for me, but I must do some work before I enjoy it.
I get that. I have to own that coffee. I end up owning it for a while before I take the first sip. So between me acquiring it and having some of it in my mouth, I have to have done some certain number of things, whether that's walk a mile. When I walk back to the monument, I don't allow myself to have a sip until I've gotten halfway there on that return trip after my run. And it just is a way I find to have motivation. Also, I'm not scared of a lot in this life, but I am scared of heights, and I'm scared of sharp things, and I'm scared of hot things. So I have to own the coffee for a while before I can do what I'm going to do with it. So that helps me regulate how quickly it will be consumed, too. But I cannot leave anything in it afterwards. I could never just throw it away. It's like admitting defeat. But you know what? As silly as that sounds, that's kind of how I am with everything. And I see things through, whether they are ridiculous little things or gargantuan tasks that somebody else would quail in front of and say, 100 people working in unison couldn't do that. And I find when I'm consistent in that attitude, and again, it's just trying to find little things in life at a difficult time in it to keep going, because later I might reach a point where I don't even think about coffee. I'm not going to get a coffee. I got one the other day. And I'd like to be able to get to that point. And to get to that point, I have to drink a lot of the stuff right now. And also, people probably know this, maybe you don't. If you're not putting sugar in it and you're not like loading it up with cream, it's really good for your heart. So it's about the best thing you can drink after water for your heart. And that's a kind of palliative that gives me comfort with some of the health issues I've had. I had a stroke a bunch of years ago, and now I'm remade my body and all that. But I have to drink a lot of things like hibiscus tea and nonfat milk and lots of water. And really, the only interesting thing is coffee, and it's also doing the same heavy lifting of keeping me healthy. Mm. So it's like win-win-win all around.
I had my annual physical back in early January, and my doctor said, yeah, how much coffee are you drinking? I said, yeah, but between 3 and 4 cups a day. And he said, wheelhouse, you're right in the wheelhouse of where right now the medical profession thinks you ought to be, that everybody should be doing that. But do you find, Colin, that you... If you know somebody, you've met them, you know them a little bit, but not terribly well, do you feel a little bit let down if they tell you, well, I don't like coffee. I don't drink coffee.
I do. I think people who don't drink it are less ruminative. I find that there's some sort of correlation between how introspective someone is and if they drink coffee. Back when there were more newspapers, I would find that people who never read the newspaper didn't tend to be very ruminative. Mm. And I think there's definitely a connection. And people will say sometimes, like, well, it gets your heart rate up. But I've looked into this. And unless you're drinking like insane amounts, it's always temporary. And it's not something that like actually influences what your heart rate's going to be. But then we have somebody like Balzac, and I'm sure you're familiar with his deal, where he would have, not only would he have 30 cups of coffee a day. He wrote extensively about how he preferred to do this on an empty stomach, and he goes into like the stomach lining and how it would shrink it and that would stay in the mind. And he goes into like great detail. You could learn a lot about the digestive system that you don't want to know if you look up on Google Balzac coffee stomach lining. And ultimately, it killed him. But Beethoven, he'd get up in the morning and he would actually measure out a set number of beans. And it wasn't just that he was going to enjoy this coffee. It was a way to start ordering his thoughts. I'll have to write that Ninth Symphony later today. That's going to be complex. Let's start getting into a good pattern of thought right now. And I just find that the way people have used it, who are artists, Bach wrote a coffee cantata, Mississippi John Hurt, the bluesman, he had this showpiece he would basically use touring around in college campuses in the 1960s after his rediscovery. And he would play this song called Coffee Blues. And it was about instant coffee and Maxwell House. And people thought, it's like, oh, this guy really loves Maxwell House. It turns out it is like this incredibly lascivious song about cunnilingus. And he gets to the end of each verse. He's like, oh, then I needed to drink some more. It's like, oh, you fluvial bastard. I know what you're up to. And people like at Oberlin College, which is like social justice warrior headquarters now, would be listening to this guy and thinking, is he seriously singing about that? Then he would actually have a can of Maxwell House next to him on the stage as a little prop. So you said the other day, it's not so good, instant coffee. I thought, well, Mississippi John Hurt could do some stuff with
it. I may have to reevaluate based on this new information. Colin Fleming.
You're not the only one who writes melodic airs deep into the night to that lost art, my friend. I wake up in the morning, oh, geez, there goes Kimball again. What's he thinking? Him and Mississippi John Hurt.
There you go. Coffee, our friend, Colin Fleming, our friend as well. Check out his work at colinfleminglit.com. Enjoy your cup tomorrow morning. I'll be thinking of you when I have mine, and we'll chat again next Tuesday.
Sounds good.
Colin Fleming, every Tuesday afternoon on Downtown.